Today on the Southern California Real Estate Report, find out CoStar's prediction for loan defaults over the next 2 years. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Welcome to the Southern California Real Estate Report. This is Bob McGuire and Danielle Wise coming to you from, what is it, quarantine week number 7 in California?
Yeah, something like that.
Six or seven. So, and it's going to keep on going. That's what they told us today. And they closed down the beaches again.
Yes.
So
everyone's pretty upset about that in this
office. Our office is pretty unhappy. But look, so I think this is the podcast, right, that everyone's kind of been waiting for.
Right.
So what does the future hold for investment real estate? And what are some of the projections that probably what we've been kind of looking at is two places. One, where are we going to get projections from the people that know, like the economists that sit within the banks, and also from CoStar and people like that that are tracking a lot of this data? And so CoStar has come out with a report that says that, you know, they're estimating that over the next 2 years, they see that, you know, distressed property sales, and particularly in multifamily, could trigger a time to buy for risk-taking investors. So what they're saying is they are projecting $148 billion in CMBS loan defaults, which is, you know, kind of scary, right? And it sounds like a huge number. And it is a huge number. But keep in mind that, you know, something that wasn't really stated in this article too. So a loan default does not necessarily equate to a loan foreclosure, right?
Right. So of course. That's a good point.
There may be many, many defaults, which, you know, right now, technically speaking, if you asked for forbearance on your loan in April or May of this year during a lockdown period or during a resetting of a loan or anything like that, that technically would be a default based on your you know,
yeah,
on typical loan covenants.
So
you know,
that would be
considered a default.
So that number might be over exaggerated just based on the fact that a lot of people are probably asking for that right now in preparation for going further into the summer.
Yeah. So what they're saying is over the next 2 years, the market could expect to see 13,000 loans totaling $148 billion held in commercial mortgage-backed securities default. And this is according to new analysis by CoStar and their risk analytics department. That represents a 14% of the loan count and 11% of the dollar amount that currently make up the CMBS universe. So $148 billion only represents 11%. So when you look at it that way, it's a pretty small number from a standpoint of what the total dollar volume is out in commercial loans.
Right.
They're saying it's about a 10%, a 10 or 11% of those loans are at risk for a default. Now, again, the default issue, you know, to go to a foreclosure, I think that there will be some buying opportunities, obviously, in certain segments of the market, probably in areas where people are leveraged, you know, at a higher point than,
of course,
you know, than other people.
That makes and, most sense.
Yeah, and also in areas where, you know, there may be, you know, a glut of available, you know, real estate out there that it hurts the vacancy rates where you just can't get income up fast enough.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So it says historical CoStar data shows when a massive amount of distressed sales flood the market in a short period of time, properties are liquidated at prices not only much lower than their outstanding loan balance, but also much lower than the market value of similar properties in the same location. So using a Great Recession as the indicator, a large volume of projected defaults today could generate a surge in distressed property sales. The ratio of distressed property sales to total transaction reached its peak of 32% in 2010 before sliding down to 2% prior to the coronavirus outbreak, according to CoStar data. looking at loan default forecasts driven from the coronavirus pandemic economic downturn scenarios. If the distressed transaction rate continues to coincide with the default rate, we could expect to see a wave of distressed sales over the next couple of years. And that's from a guy named Xiaojing Li, who's the managing director of CoStar Analytics. And he's saying that swings the door wide open for opportunistic investors. But here's the thing, okay? So, you and I have talked about this a lot. I don't know in our market and in Southern California, I'm not so sure that that's really going to be the case for us. We still have a housing crisis, you know.
Right.
So we're looking at this from a Southern California perspective. I definitely think that there are parts of the country that could get hit very hard by this.
Well, you wonder if – so currently, I believe San Diego is managed – pretty well through this coronavirus pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Knock on wood that continues. And so there might be this move to more sprawled out cities, like from New York to a city like San Diego that offers less condensed, like is less condensed than a city like that that's maybe suffered more from the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah.
And that offers better weather and more outdoor space.
Yeah.
So you wonder if in a city with a housing crisis, if there is a possibility that, you know, obviously we might not see the severity of this as the rest of the country because of our weather, because people can still manage to get outside and because it's still in a semi-affordable city compared to Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing is, too, is that, when CoStar is getting this information, I mean, you have to ask, you know, how is this information sourced? And so CoStar is looking through their data, right, and they're looking at loans that they feel based on the Compass credit risk model that the loans would – so they're saying that the probability of reinstatement as projected by the Compass credit risk model under the COVID-19 scenario, these properties are most likely to go through a distressed liquidation process, and on average they're expected to be sold at a price 60% of the loan's value. So they're saying that it's a high probability of default and a low probability of reinstatement. So they're looking at loans that probably have high leverage – that are probably in certain parts of the country that they associate with more risk, or there are analytics that are saying that whatever segment, you know, whatever particular CMBS property. So this isn't all apartments.
Right.
This is all commercial real estate too.
I mean, and also
so apartments represent a big portion of it because there's obviously been such a massive, you know, amount of construction in the apartment world over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years.
I also think you have to keep in mind that we're not in 2008. Like, these loans are good loans.
Yeah. So I have another question, too, about this. And I have somebody that's a very good friend of mine who's a very successful syndicator. He works in the western part of the United States. And we had a long talk about this earlier, in the month of April. And he believes that there's still a ton of demand for apartments. So whether or not there's going to be these good screaming deals that these guys are talking about.
I don't know. I know a lot of people, you know, as we got further into this, you know, long period of growth in our country, did really well. And we're holding on for that. We're waiting for the next recession to invest.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I don't think anyone obviously no one expected this to cause a recession and this to be what it is. But everyone was kind of expecting a recession, and a lot of people were preparing for it. At least that's what I saw with some people who I'd spoken to. So I wonder if these loans, these investments people were making, I think were still pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, and so here's the thing that they're saying. They're saying that, that the properties are most likely to go through a distressed liquidation process, and on average, they're expected to be sold at a price that's 60% of the loan's value. Among property types, the potential value decline for defaulted loans falls most steeply for retail properties at an average drop of 76%. Then it's followed by office, down 68%, multifamily, down 65%, and hotel and industrial, down 62%. Notably, of the approximately 13,000 loans, multifamily made up about 11,000 of those. The remainder came from retail, 823 loans, office 732, hotels 718, and industrial and other property types. The financial fallout from the coronavirus will also hit the value of properties, even where the loan does not go into default, according to CoStar Risk Analytics. Hotels would be hit the hardest, seeing potential values decline by 39%.
So none of this is surprising to me, right? It's like we know that retail has had a very difficult time adjusting to our new world where a lot of things are done online. We know that, you know, office space has gotten way more condensed because people don't need as much space to work in thanks to, you know, automation and the fact that we use computers for most things. So those trends, you know, this might have, you know, sped up those trends. But the reality is that, you know, big office spaces, even in San Diego, which had a lot of demand at the, you know, a few months ago.
Yeah.
People were, you know, the demand was different, and the demand keeps changing. And I feel like you're going to see that obviously happen a lot more.
Yeah.
Obviously, retail is going to change. People are still going to need places to go, though. And I think that, you know, retail is not going to be dead, and office space is not going to be dead. It's just going to be a change in how people use it.
Yeah, for sure. And there's going to be a change in you know, retail. Hard to say what the changes are going to be there because there's so much like defunct retail that's out there in the form of malls and things like that. And some of these big box power centers
and
stuff like that.
In San Diego, we because of our weather, we're constantly able to create these environments that are utilizing outdoor space that are a lot cheaper to build probably than these massive malls, which are built
that are indoors.
Indoors.
And, you know, definitely on that. But the other thing is, too, is it's just the orientation of the space. I mean, store formats are shrinking, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to factor that in. And then what do you do with that surplus space? So, you know,
if we're going to be 6 feet social distancing, maybe restaurants and retail will need a lot more space.
Yeah. And so will office.
Yeah.
You're no longer going to have the co-working millennial office space that you guys all like. That's
over. I didn't really like it. I found it hard to work in.
Yeah. It's, you know what I mean, where you're sitting next to somebody in an open space, that's going to go away.
The bullpens are going to be different.
Yeah, and the high ceilings and all that stuff I think is going to go away. So something that they say here, though, they're saying that they're seeing potential value declines of 39%. Apartments would follow at 19%, office and retail down 16%, industrial down 15%. So that's how they're seeing these adjustments come. But they're saying pre-COVID-19 value growth has been stronger in multifamily and industrial than in office and retail in the past several years. He said, so when multifamily and industrial loans do go to default, they're more likely to be in underperforming properties and in inferior locations. So exactly what I said. So that's pretty important to understand that in Southern California, inferior locations, I mean, granted, there are some, but it's so difficult to build here that most developers are not building something in what would be considered an inferior location. It takes a long time to do it. It's very expensive to do it. So I think that there's probably there's probably a more conservative approach to development in California. Now, in areas in large landmass cities, Phoenix, Arizona, where it's a huge city, it's spread out. New cities pop up outside of old cities very quickly. So, example, you know, somewhere where you're going from Scottsdale to Goodyear to Prescott, you know, things like that. Those are all kind of new cities that are created. So those areas, you know, you might say that if you're on the outskirts of a big city, that's probably what you would classify as an inferior location, right?
So what about
as opposed to core?
What about these people that did develop in core locations, like the downtown San Diego, where they're building?
I think with real estate, it's location, location, location. I think the issues that retail is going to have downtown over this year, it's going to be significant. You know, you're not going to have any restaurant growth. You're going to have restaurant closures galore. You're having no live music downtown, no 4th of July this year, no Comic-Con, and no Padres. So downtown is going to get hit hard by this. And some of the new construction in downtown is going to be, you know, that's going to be challenging. You know, you're going to have to figure out a way to, I'm sure they're meeting with their lenders right now and discussing, you know, what their options are to somehow come up with a bridge or an interest-only option on their loans if they can to sort of bridge this gap. Because, you know, you can't – I mean, downtown, you can't do anything about the loss of people down there. You know, who's going to go downtown over the next 4 months? So, but for retail, they're saying they see an even bigger split. And when comparing defaulted loans versus non-defaulted loans, they're saying there's winners and losers due to the consumer buying habit change and the rise in e-commerce sales. So, and they're saying that COVID-19 may push this further. So, you know, there's still going to be a lot of retail shakeout, basically, is what that's saying. So you're going to see a combination of not only are you going to see store closures, but you're also going to see just outdated concepts that you're losing to Amazon. So Amazon continues to be just – they're like the virus of retail, and they have been for a long time, and it's going to continue to be that way. So yeah, well, this whole thing –
if you can support local, then do, you know.
Yeah, this whole thing is going to be interesting. Obviously, we appreciate you guys listening today. We're going to keep focused on this. The economic impact of this COVID-19 is going to be, you know, significant. The other thing is, too, is that, you know, we're of the opinion, too, the longer this goes and the less deaths that we experience and things like that, the more economic damage that seems to be unneeded is going to continue, you know. And I'm just not sure what to say about that. I would never say anything that's out of step with what maybe the local people are recommending. But at the same time, I think that they need to rethink, you know, what they're really doing here.
I think I'm going to say this knowing that it could get me in a bit of trouble, but realizing that, like, the economic impact and the life impact, like, you know, when you hear deaths and life, obviously we want to do as much as we possibly can to stop that. But what people don't necessarily realize is that the economic impact over a long period of time can be very detrimental.
Yeah.
And to people's lives.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there is that conversation that has to be in the back of people's minds that we can only do so much to we have to balance out. We have to at some point we have to look at the economic impacts.
Yeah.
Closer.
I mean, it's just, you
because
know,
if you aren't able to feed your family because you lost your job,
yeah.
You know, and this is not like right now it's different, right? Because you get support from the government. But what happens when that runs out?
Well, here's the thing that you're getting from the government, though. You're getting 2.5 months of payroll. That's the largest, you know, basic economic package that's out there right now for small business. So 2.5 months of payroll, when that started, let's say, a month ago in April.
Right.
We're now at the end of April. They're having a second round. That money will be, you know, pretty much saturated and gone. Let's say rather than in the 2 weeks or the 10 days the last one went for multi-billions of dollars, this next one maybe takes 3 or 4 weeks, you know. And then they are saying that there's a possibility of a third. But there are economic implications to that too. And, again, that will still be a short-term bridge. So everyone that's getting that, you have to think that we're just kicking the can with California now extending – into May, all these people in April, they've already burned through two of their pay periods, and
yeah,
they're coming
exactly.
to the end.
We'll have to talk about this in another podcast too. Just
yeah.
to go over this a little bit more carefully because it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's sad.
There's definitely going to be some fallout, and like you said, you know, there's people's lives are kind of hanging in the balance on these decisions, and they have major implications. More. I think what you're saying is sometimes these effects are worse than the virus itself.
I think that in the long term, it could. Right now, it's hard to look at what's going on right now and say that. But if you were, like, you look at these projections and you wonder. People are going to lose a lot.
A lot.
And that's really sad. And that should be a concern in people's minds just as much as the death toll.
Yeah. Yeah, the government should be balancing that out, and I think in a lot of ways probably better. But look, we'll keep an eye on this. We'll continue to follow these economic trends. The good news is it looks like we hit a bottom with the stock market, so the stock market's starting to stabilize. So, you know, who knows what happens with that over the next couple of months. But I think there's definitely going to be some rocky roads ahead of us, and we'll continue to track to that. Thanks for listening today. This has been the Southern California Real Estate Report.